Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, hi, and welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. Who am I? I'll never tell. I'm not Gossip Girl. I'm Emma Gunn Wardner, and I'm your host. And in this episode, I'm joined by personal trainer and strength coach, Laura Hoggins. Although head to social media and you'll see she's better known as Laura Biceps. Now, strength is the operative word here, but we'll get to that in a minute. I actually met Laura many years ago. I was a beauty editor for a magazine, and she was a marketing exec at L'Oreal. We have quite a few mutual friends, actually. But our paths haven't crossed for years. Via social media, I was vaguely aware that she was into fitness, to use air quotes, but I didn't quite realise so much so. Then a few weeks ago, I took a class at SoulCycle. I had my first ride at SoulCycle, which was amazing, by the way. If you haven't listened to the episode with SoulCycle CEO Melanie Whelan, then I advise you take a few skips back on the podcast feed and find that. She was amazing. But guess who was on the bike next to me? Laura. We started chatting after class, and Laura told me about everything she'd been doing, leaving her really successful marketing career, retraining as a personal trainer, focusing on her physical health and how lifting, that's lifting weights, changed her life. It's something she believes in so much that the opening line of her book, Lift Yourself, is, "Lifting changed my life, and I believe it has the power to change yours too." And trust me, within the pages, she makes a compelling case while sharing her own experiences, insight, and expertise. What I find so interesting and inspiring about Laura's journey is how she has followed her gut and trusted her instinct, just as much as she has made physical transformations for herself and for others. On paper, Laura was doing just fine, rising up the corporate ladder, earning welfare age, and on a career trajectory that would, let's be honest here, set her up pretty nicely. So to decide to retrain, to create a plan where she could make the transition from marketing to fitness as smoothly as she did is impressive. It's also worth noting, because I think this is important, that she did this at a time when the fitness boom really took off. And I personally know about a dozen people who quit corporate or well-paid life to move into wellness. It was something of a risk. And there was definitely a certain tone and style to all of this. It was when, you know, sportswear boutiques started popping up everywhere and the prices of, you know, a pair of running tights tripled. But Laura, among other fitness people who I follow, has remained consistent and authentic, staying true to what she believes in, not what might gain more followers. You don't have to spend much time with Laura to know she's on your side. She's a grafter, and she loves a grafter too. She'll guide you, encourage you, and help you see what she sees, that you can do it. Now, if you listen to this podcast, if you follow me on social media where I'm at Emma Gunns, you'll know that I love a bit of cardio. For me, there's a real kind of, if I do some cardio, I feel like I've achieved something. I'm not a natural born runner. I'm not a physically natural born runner. So the fact that I can do it makes me feel really good. And reading Laura's book was a really stark reminder that actually, whilst that is great, supporting it with a strength training regime is really important, and we'll talk about that in the episode. In this show, Laura and I talk about making career changes, why fitness and strength are a calling, how she plotted a path towards her dream of becoming a full-time trainer, and how fitness helped her believe in and care for herself in a way she hadn't before. And of course, we talk about her incredible book, which I have read and found to be both informative, unputdownable, encouraging, and motivating. It's my pleasure to say that joining me in this episode is the brilliant, call her what you like, I call her Laura Hoggins, but sometimes I may call her Laura Biceps too, or just Biceps to be honest, but I'm very glad that she's joining me on this episode of the podcast. Right, so this is super exciting. And also one of those podcasts where you sit down and you have a good hour's chat before you start recording.
True story.
Laura Hoggins, Laura Biceps on social media.
Yeah.
Is joining me, and it's such a lovely sort of a reintroduction because we've met before.
Yeah.
In your old life.
Yeah.
And then we re-met properly at a SoulCycle class.
A new life.
And we met on bikes next to each other.
Yeah.
And suddenly realised, oh yeah, we know each other from before.
Yeah.
So you are a personal trainer.
Correct.
You are all about the positivity. You are one of life's optimists.
Yeah.
And the reason why I wanted to get you on the show is because you are somebody who is in personal training now, but that's not your origin story.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So the context in which we met was by Emma Scott's desk.
Yeah.
In L'Oreal HQ.
Correct. Yeah. In the thick of it. It was, I remember very clearly where we were. It was an incredible place to work that, but it feels like a very distant memory in my life now. I feel like I've definitely, I learned so much from it. I absolutely loved it, but I'm in a very, very new chapter of life and one that feels far more authentic to me, to what I was born to do, I feel.
Okay, so that was obviously what we're going to unpick. Yeah. So you were very much, what were you doing day to day? It was very corporate.
Yeah, correct. I mean, it's one of those things that when I was growing up, I mean, I'm an only child, and I literally, if you speak to my poor parents, I did every single sports club I could do. I did judo, canoeing, football, basketball, cricket, hockey. I was in some sort of stamp collecting club, chess. Like, honestly, I lived for team sports. I just loved it. And I was a very keen footballer, but I didn't really like doing much that sort of the standard girl things. Mm. So like dance club and all of that, it wasn't really my jam. And I've just grown up getting my energy from other people. I loved working together with people as a team for whatever, some sort of common goal. And that was always my passion. If you asked me when I was 8, I was going to be a waitress on roller skates. If you asked me when I was 15, I was going to be a physiotherapist. Because if I didn't make it as a professional sports player, I wanted to work within sports. And I thought, do you know what? I'm gonna be a physio. I'm gonna be not playing. I'm gonna be in the back room staff. That would be amazing.
That's interesting. The person who looks after the athletes.
There you go.
We'll come on to that later.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That refers to our previous hour conversation. but yeah, it was one of those things that's what I was desperate to do. And then as you get to it, I sort of went through university and life took a slightly different turn. And you sort of get into the drinking culture and life's all a bit more of a party. And I just think I lost my way a little bit. And once you sort of go to, you know, graduate from university, which, by the way, I wasn't going to do. I wanted to stay and work at David Lloyd forever with my boyfriend that was the lifeguard who couldn't swim, which was perfect.
So you used to have a big net.
Yeah, well, it was so, it was like 3 foot. It was like stand up if you're drowning. Like there was no, that was his job. Anyway, so at the time, that was my life. But actually further education was not a pressure, but everyone was doing it. It was very important. So I said, do you know what? I'm going to go and do business studies and marketing. Coming out of university, it's like, right, well, I need to get a marketing job somewhere. Mm. My parents just happened at the time to move to the Cayman Islands, and I was due to go with them. And I thought, no, do you know what? I'm going to stay. I'm going to get a career. So I started working for a company called Unilever, who are one of the biggest.
Yes,
one of the biggest and greatest companies. So I worked on brands like sort of the ice cream portfolio. I think Ben & Jerry's was my first one. Which is pretty cool after uni.
I think you might have sent a mini fridge to my magazine back in the day.
Yes, we probably did. We did a lot of that, sort of Dove, Lynx, all of those kind of household brands. But what an incredible company for me to start my career. It was very, very corporate, a lot of structure, very specific roles and responsibilities. And I really learned how to sort of find my feet in a corporate responsibility. So the physio was still in the back of my mind, but no, this is what I should really do. And as a woman in fitness, it's really hard for you to see what that career path could look like. It was all guys. All the guys that, you know, in teams were men. So I was thinking, okay, maybe that isn't for me. I'll continue to pursue this. And you build loads of friends, and it's quite cool, isn't it? When you've got your office and you live for the weekends. And it got to sort of 5 years down the line, and I thought, hang on a minute, this isn't life. And I'd broken up with my boyfriend, which was absolute devastation. We were together just over 10 years. He was like my best friend. We met when we were 15.
Wow.
So, like, yeah, I remember when he went on holiday once. I think I cried the whole week he was there because we just couldn't bear to be apart. And anyway, it was sort of like, okay, now I've got this new personal situation. I decided I'm going to move to the Cayman Islands to live with my parents. So... Mm. The Cayman Islands, for those of you that do not know, it is just underneath Miami, next to Jamaica. It couldn't be further away from London or Surrey, where I was living at the time. And when I moved out there, I remember I had to do a medical to join for the job that I was doing. So I worked for a water sports company, and they had to weigh me. And it was probably the biggest shock of my life. I looked at how much I weighed and I was like, you are kidding. Like, when did this happen? So in my unhappiness of being so stressed at work, I'd gained so much weight, and I think I was just a little bit numb to it.
Mm.
And I was finally faced with this number that I had to give to my work. This is how much I weigh. And if you weren't self-conscious before, you suddenly were.
Mm.
And I had to be on the beach all day. And I suddenly felt like an absolute house, I'll be honest. Mm. I felt so uncomfortable in my own skin. I thought, something's got to change. Otherwise, I'm just down this spiral of working too hard and I'm not prioritising myself. I'm smoking too much. Mm. I'm drinking too much. I'm partying too much. And although it was really fun at the time, you know, at some point I felt like, you know, I couldn't live this facade of life's really good and it's a party, because I wasn't really, you know, serving my health or my wellness, really. So when I was in the Cayman Islands for a year, I lost 52 pounds, exactly. I lost a pound a week, very random. And that is because I suddenly had no pressure. I was living life outside on the beach. I had a load of guy mates and we just hung out on the beach all day, and there was no worries. There was no comparison. There wasn't really any social media. It was nothing really. And I just found myself again. And I'd lost, you know, 52 pounds, whatever it was, you know, losing weight. And I really hate to associate weight loss with happiness, because I don't think it was that. It was more that I had changed my lifestyle and I started to be kinder to myself. And my lifestyle was better in that before I started work, me and one of my friends, we'd do a little run down the beach. It was beautiful, down 7 Mile Beach. I was very active. I ate better. Still smoked quite a lot, but, you know, life, whatever. And, yeah, I just came. I was, like, there for a year. And I said, you know what, Mum, I think I'm ready to go back. I've sort of had this escape almost.
Mm.
And I need to go back because career's happening without me. And actually in that year, I was very worried, like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to halt my career. You know, what my friends think. I came back and nothing changed. Mm. I went back. I went actually back to Unilever for a year or so, because I just rang my old boss and said, can I come back? He was like, yeah, you can just do what you did before. Like, a year had passed. So that's, you know, when you worry, like...
How old were you at this point?
I was mid... it was 2008, so I was mid-20s.
Right.
I was mid-20s and I was like, I've had a bit of a career, but I didn't ever have that gap year. So I felt like I've had that escape and I've come back. And do you know what? I feel like such a different person, just an enhanced version of me. I was still always the same, but I just felt like I'd had control of myself a bit better. I'd kind of let things get out of control for a bit.
That's a lovely way of describing it, an enhanced version of myself.
Yeah, I really was. I when I say I'm a different, but I'm not. I'm exactly the same.
Yeah.
But I just look, I prioritise myself a bit better, I'd say.
Mm.
So I came back, and then I was like, when I was at Unilever, I was like, do you know what? I'm ready for a new challenge now. I feel so much more confident in myself. I'm gonna get a new job. And I had this interview at L'Oreal, which for me was kind of when you're working on like soap, detergent and margarine, you know, working at L'Oreal looks a little bit like, wow, they all wear Louboutins and wear red lipstick, because I'm not sure I can do that. I'm, you know, that's not really me. And I went and I had
and
this
a lot of them did.
Right. Yeah, well, I was kind of a little bit different, but do you know what, it really worked, because there are some things about, you know, a lot of things about the industry that I was so passionate about. Like, I love like I've dyed my hair every single color. I love, you know, hair products and beauty products, and I really love the industry. And actually I remember in my interview, they didn't really ask me so much about my CV. They said, what do you have in your makeup bag? And I loved it because it was all about a feeling. It was about a passion of something that they really believed in. Mm. And no matter what it was, you know, if people could talk so passionately about something that was just an eyeshadow, I thought that was incredible. So I thought, you know what? It seems very dynamic. I think I'm going to learn a very different way of this corporate life. So I went to L'Oreal and I met a lot of incredible people who I still call my friends today, most of them. And I kind of finished at L'Oreal. I was there for about 5 years, and I had a message from an amazing, amazing woman called Thea Green.
Ah, Nails Inc.
Exactly. So Thea Green, I don't think she'll mind me saying this. She sent me a message on LinkedIn saying, do you want to meet? That was it. Mm-hmm. And I replied like, hi, wow, hi, Thea Green. yes, I would love to meet you. And we went for a coffee and we had this most amazing discussion. I just thought, I have to work for this woman, because all so far I've worked for big corporations and I've worked for the man that I don't know. Mm. And it's been amazing and I've learned a lot. But this woman is doing this from nothing. She's done this from scratch and she's built this empire and this brand that I love. And I thought, I'd love to learn from this woman. So I went and worked for Thea Green for a year and it was absolutely amazing. It was stressful at times, as you can imagine. The industry is hugely dynamic and I loved it. And it gave me the confidence to go, I could do this on my own.
What was the difference? What was it that made it so game changing?
So when you're working for Thea Green, every decision you're making is her baby. Mm. It's not the brand or, you know, the global company. It's something that Thea Green, you have to sit in front of her and look her in the eye and say, I believe this is the best decision for your business.
This is how you should spend your money.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, in corporate, they go, imagine it was your own money. And you go, yeah, cool. But it's not.
It never is.
It's not. You kind of think, well, this will get washed away. Mm. You know, it's not, you know, and I... Thea and I had an excellent professional and personal relationship, and I would still call her as a friend now. She trains at my gym sometimes. She's awesome. But I kind of saw underneath the layers, and I saw what it takes to run your own business and be your own brand. And I talk a lot about the importance of resilience in the career that I do, and that's one of the things I think Thea has. Mm. No isn't no. If you feel very strongly about something, if you have a passion, if you have a belief, you keep going until something happens. And if you really have, you know, kept going and maybe it doesn't happen, you've tried. And she has such a strong value ethos about how she wants her business to be run. I thought, well, I'm the product now. Mm. And actually, for years, I've wanted to be in fitness, but I've never really looked at my body and thought, you could stand up confidently and be an amazing PT. And everyone's always said, oh, you'd be a really good coach. Mm. Because I've always coached, you know, here and there, netball coaching or whatever. And people go, oh, the way you deliver things is so different. And I've sort of gone, oh, okay, yeah, no, sure. And then the confidence that I had at this point in my life, I thought, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. So I did it. And I said to Thea, I've loved this experience, but I'm just going to throw caution to the wind. I'm going to go and do it. And over that year that I was working for Thea, I decided to sort of, I guess, put a toe in the water. And I'd got all my qualifications previously and I started taking on clients. And I used to train myself in the morning. I used to go back to the gym and I used to observe the other coaches training just for experience. And I'd get to bed absolutely knackered. And my social life took a bit of a hit, but I just wanted to get experience. And I used to PT people at the weekend. And suddenly I started to just think, do you know what, Laura, maybe this could work out for you. And I thought, I'm going to try it. So I quit, didn't have a job to go to. And there was a new boutique studio that was opening in London. And I went down, I trained there, and I thought, this is really my style of training. It got very popular. So I thought, I'm going to apply to work there. And we had a very good relationship. I went for, I was training there for about a month and we all got on really well. And they were like, cool, we've got auditions. I went for my audition, which I was talking for, there's about 30 people there. And I was on for just under 60 seconds. It was not the biggest of auditions I've ever done. And I didn't hear anything for ages. And I was starting to get worried. I really thought it was a dead cert. And they said, unfortunately, there's no job for you here. We didn't think you were loud enough. And I thought, that's weird.
That's interesting.
Loud. In under 60 seconds, you've known me for a while. I've trained with you. I've got a very good relationship with your sort of gym community. Mm. And when it came to it, I wasn't loud enough.
Volume was the deciding factor.
But it wasn't. That wasn't it. Mm. You know when you're like, okay, I don't know for sure, of course, but I just felt that wasn't the whole story. Mm. Anyway, it turned out there was someone else that got the job instead of me, and that's absolutely fine and amazing. And it's actually a blessing in disguise, because when one door closes, you know, perhaps the right door opens for you another time. And sometimes the things that we think are for us actually aren't.
Or you see the door that's been open the whole time.
Yes.
But you've been staring at the wrong door.
Or actually the door you've been staring at wasn't necessarily most authentic, but you felt that's what you had to go for. And yeah. I think for me, that style actually it was never right for me. And I'm genuinely so glad that happened. But I was devastated at the time, because I thought, God, I've really made, you know, I'm not 21. Mm. I've had this sort of 10-year corporate career. I've made quite a big change. And where I thought I was going to be safe, I'm really not safe. So I felt really vulnerable at that point, because not only do I not look like, you know, the tall size 6 model with shredded abs, I don't have a job. And where I thought I would be positioned in this industry, I'd just been rejected from. Mm. So I was really like, wow, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I just go back. And I'd always said to myself, like, I'll give myself 3 months, whatever, and see what happens. Anyway, I got a call one day. Hey, the Ministry of Sound are going to open a gym. Would you be keen? And I was like, wow. Like, I'm really into my music. Like, I've been to Ibiza like 18 times. Like, house music is so important to me. And I was like, okay, this is it. This is the door. And I started off working at front of house on receptions to gain a bit of experience and watch the other coaches, because I was very, very new. And they were amazing, the coaches I was watching. And I just kept saying to the person that was recruiting, I was like, I'm ready. Like, whenever you're ready, like, I'm here, audition me. Like, I really want this. Mm. I have this idea that I'd run this strength class, and I feel really, really strongly about it, because I've run it in a couple of other gyms, and, you know, it was really good, and no one really does it. And I just kept going on about this thing, and it was called Lifted. And it was like, Lifted was actually a concept that I'd come up with when I was looking after my mum when she first, so my mum got diagnosed with breast cancer. And I remember I went home to go and hang out with mum and dad, you know, just spending time with her. And she said to me, like, you've got to do this thing, whatever it is, like, let's call it a name. And that weekend I was staying with mum and dad, mum was like, trademark it. So I went on company's house and mum paid 50 quid for me to trademark this thing, Lifted. And we made this little logo and everything anyway. So I was like, I feel so strongly about doing this, because weightlifting changed my life. I want to give it to other people. I have this gift now. Like, I have this relief of, okay, I have my thing. I feel like I belong somewhere. So I want to share it. Anyway, to this day, we just celebrated nearly 2 years of me teaching this class called Lifted. We're actually recording this podcast in Ministry of Sound, and I've trained people for over 2 years here, and I've taught them. Some people that come to me, well, most people have never lifted a weight before. And men and women of all ages, of all experience. And it is the biggest honour when someone comes to me and goes, I've never done it before, I'm really petrified, but I feel like you'll teach me. And I'm like, yes, because I felt that. And when I first started, I was absolutely petrified, and I was rubbish, actually. But I just felt like it was this thing. It was like my therapy. It was like my outlet, and it made me feel physically successful. Mm. And that feeling of being physically successful had absolutely nothing to do with how much I weighed for the first time. Mm. And that, to me, was just a game changer.
There's an awful lot to unpick in all of that, because it is an amazing story, literally going from corporate marketing to the gym floor.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that it's interesting, something you said at the beginning about working with a team to achieve a common goal.
Yeah.
And now the training that you do, you work with somebody to achieve.
Absolutely.
A goal. And you, listeners, we've spoken for a little bit before this. Sorry to keep referencing it. But you are as invested as the person. Like, their win is as much a win for you, and their perhaps setback is as much of a setback for you. Like, you are.
Yeah, I'm in it.
Yeah. Let's just go back a little bit into the corporate world, just because I'm interested to understand, you probably transitioned into fitness at a time when it was quite fashionable to do
Correct.
It. Is that right?
Yeah, but it was there was only like two studios, like boutique fitness, let's call it, because it's so hard. Like I could have been a PT at Fitness First, and I could have gone down that route. But at the time, I'd just seen a shoot of opportunity in this group fitness. This is like this team training, this thing that I felt I loved. Mm. And that's what I went for. But actually, I mean, there's now, I think there's over 50 boutique studios in London. It's absolutely exploded. Mm. And I feel very fortunate to be a part of it when it exploded at the time, because the first one was Barry's Bootcamp, really, which is amazing. It was the first time I saw that was like the Beckhams and like the Kardashians were doing this thing in LA, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. It was like this dark red room, and it was a different way of doing fitness, and it was slightly trendy, as you say, but also it's brought people into fitness that weren't in it before.
But I think what I'm getting at a little bit is people going from the safety, to use air quotes, the safety of a corporate job or a safe job or one that has a very obvious career progression
Correct.
And has a salary.
Yeah.
And saying, actually, I'm going to retrain. I'm guessing you retrained whilst you were still working.
Yeah, yeah. It all happened at once. Social life went down the toilet.
and basically decided to essentially become your own business in many ways, to become a personal trainer.
Yeah.
So talk to me about the decision making and when you were doing the training.
Yeah.
Well, how you juggled it. I always worry about using the word juggled in a...
No, but I know what you mean. And it was really hard. Because I was always like, if you ask my mates, like in the peak of my party season, let's call it, I would more than likely be the person that's got the story. Like it would be like, well, where did she end up? Or like, what happened? What did she do? Just because, like, if I do anything, I do it with everything I have. And that's with life and social as well. So I was probably somewhere dancing on a speaker anyway. And I just suddenly realised I could do that, or I could use that time to invest in myself and retrain. So my social life did take quite a big hit. And
so did you have to change the way that your brain was thinking, rather than thinking about like the pleasure center and going, I want to have fun tonight, or I want to have fun this weekend? Mm. Were you thinking, for the purposes of the fun I could have in 18 months time,
exactly,
when I could do X?
Yeah.
I'm going to dial it back and I'm going to do this.
Exactly. So it was like instant gratification. Let's go out and get smashed, or, you know, and like sit and have a cigarette outside somewhere till 3 a.m. Perfect. Like that was great.
Do you still smoke?
No, not now. Not now.
Good.
I don't, but I used to. And that was like great. It was like the good times, just, you know, sitting outside and just talking a load of rubbish with people. Not rubbish, but you know what I mean? And this time...
Chatting shit is what they call it on the street.
Well, 100%. I chatted a lot of shit for many years, but it was great shit at the time. So I'm literally like, right, well, I could do that, or I could sit and I could read about, you know, the pulmonary vein and, you know, the different training considerations for women or whatever, because I genuinely was interested. Like, I was into my training and I wanted to understand more about the principles behind it. And I knew if I didn't do it now, I would never do it. And I didn't like the projection of my life continuing to be where it was, because...
This is something I wrote down, actually. So you must have been working for, 4 or 5 years before you went to the Caymans?
Yes, exactly. 5 years, yeah.
So I think it's quite an interesting... I've always felt quite guilty about the fact that if my work is repetitive, it's almost as if I go into standby mode.
Yeah.
And I stopped being lively. I can't think of a better way of describing it. And I was listening to Joe Rogan on his podcast, and he just said some people are suited to getting up at the same time every day, doing the same thing, getting the same train.
Yeah, not me.
But he was like, that to me physically makes me wither.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I'd actually heard somebody articulate it in that way. I have to have variety. Doesn't make a more structured lifestyle wrong.
Yeah.
But it was, I remember hearing it and thinking, I wish I'd heard that 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Because I always thought I was bad and wrong for not really finding that groove, a comfortable place or an inspiring place. I found it quite depressing when I'd have like two or three weeks where everything was exactly the same.
Yeah, but I think at the time I didn't realise it was, because I didn't feel capable of doing anything else. I'd limited myself. And I think it had quite a strong relationship with like my view of myself and my body and my self-esteem, because I'd gone through this horrendous breakup that literally was just awful.
Flawed you.
Yeah, because it was everything that I thought, and then I was like, okay, wow. And then you start to consider what did I do wrong? It must have been me. Is it the way I look? Is it the way that I am? Whatever. And you know, females in whatever age you are, I'm sure you can relate to, okay, well, it must have been because I wasn't attractive enough or I wasn't thin enough. And then I just went on this crusade. It was like this mad revenge body like situation of like, right, I'm just gonna run everywhere. And you know, I'd be obsessed with like my tracker and, oh, okay, how many calories have I burned? I'd eat absolutely nothing, and you know, I'd just have a cigarette and a Calippo when I was in Ibiza. Like, as my favorite, one of my favorite stories. Like, I swear to you, every morning I'd wake up, I'd buy the Sun newspaper, a Calippo, and take my pack of cigarettes, and I'd go and sit on the beach and probably worry.
I'm more upset about the newspaper.
Yeah, sorry. I think it was a good time in the newspaper. Anyway, it was just one of those things that I felt like I had to restrict myself, because I almost felt ashamed of how I looked. And I've had such a mad relationship with myself over the years. I don't think you could ever describe me as shy or unconfident, yet under the layers, I've had such a challenging relationship with my reflection, because...
This is why you and I are friends.
Right. But it's almost like I've got so much life and energy to give, but I gave so much that I forgot to give to myself. And I almost forgot I was important. And I didn't realise what I wasn't doing until I was doing it.
Right.
And I sort of found this, oh my God, I can actually, God, I feel better. I haven't absolutely done myself in this weekend. I feel really good. And what I'm not here to say is, you know, don't drink and don't, you know, don't, any vices, whatever, don't do it. I just mean that I think I did it as almost like an escape, because I didn't really want to face. When I was in work, I was all in, I was going for it. When I was going out, I was all in. And I didn't give myself the time to really ask myself, are you all right?
Was your sense of identity your job title or the brand that you were working on?
I don't think it was necessarily the brand. It was more, maybe I was very much in the here and now, and this is really important, and work was very important. You'd hear me a lot go, oh God, I sort of wasn't negative about it. I was like, work's a lot at the moment, but it'll get better soon. And it never did, because I was constantly giving to it, because it felt good to give to it, because I felt like I was doing the right thing. And I sacrificed myself at the same time.
I call it load bearing, where you just keep on, you do one task well.
Yeah.
So you want to go, look, what, you think I did that well? Look at me doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
And case in point, doing a podcast every day in May.
Did you?
Yeah. But I suddenly, and with the health scare that I obviously listeners know about,
yeah,
I suddenly thought, well, who was I trying to impress? And I wonder whether you were having a similar thing of, again, I'm wondering about ego and sense of identity. And the more I can do, the more you will think. Was it about what other people thought of you? Were you disconnected from what do I think of myself? And was that why maybe the whole not looking after yourself thing?
It's very weird. I can try and best describe this as, I never wanted public praise, but I wanted the person that I valued to notice.
Yes.
So I never wanted to be the award winner on the stage of the company's best employee. I found that a bit awkward. I don't like standing on the table on my birthday, but I want that one person that I really care about or I'm really inspired about to maybe just go, do you know what, that was really good. And that was enough for me.
Yeah.
That was enough for me. If it was someone that I really wanted or I really aspired to be, I just wanted them to be like, yeah, cool, you've done a good job there.
So joining the dots, and I'm coming from a real place of love and compassion here because I feel you.
Yeah.
You wanted it from somebody else. You were looking for external validation because the internal validation just wasn't switched
there.
On.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think I've always just been so full of energy and full of beans. But when I really look back on myself, I looked a bit unhappy. inside, I think, because, and I've had loads of conversations with my mum about this, because she's like, I find it really difficult hearing you say that because I've always thought you were fine. I'm like, no, I was fine, but I didn't know how much better I could have felt about myself, because I just sorted myself out. I was always fine, but it was constantly, I think it was just, I felt so like I was such a disappointment in that relationship to that person that I just so wanted not to cheat on me, to be very honest. You know, it was just like, why have you done this again? It was my expectations of someone else that just so deeply hurt me. And then I just blamed it all on myself. And I thought, well, it must be how I look. And I think I've kind of just taken that into my job now, in terms of you can't judge someone on how they look. You have no idea what someone's been through, what someone's working towards, and you can't judge someone's health or wellness by how they look. You have no idea what they're not showing you. And I mean mental health as well. You know, on the outside, someone could look, oh my God, they look amazing, whatever. They could be going through so much. On the outside, I look fine. Inside, I was really struggling with myself for no bad reason. I've had a very privileged and an incredible upbringing. I have amazing friends. But just something about my relationship with myself and my body, I just didn't quite get right.
And what do you think was, like, for now, if you think about that relationship, if that were to happen to you again, and somebody were to cheat or to break up with you, would you be able to compartmentalize it and say, it's not just about me. There might be elements of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't mean that I'm less than I was.
Totally. Totally.
Well, that's pleasing to hear.
Yeah. No, honestly, I feel like it's one of those things, I look back at it and I do think I wish there's things I'd done differently. Because I think the way I felt about myself was probably externalized onto him as well, which probably he probably found it difficult to deal with me if I wasn't feeling as that confident, if that makes sense, because he didn't understand why I wasn't. And then he would do, I don't know, it's hard to look back at it. It was an amazing learning, but I think I'm a little bit dead about to relationships and commitment now. It's really hard.
Well, it's interesting you use the word failure just now.
Yeah.
Or failings. And I think you've got lifted.
Yeah, yeah.
And strength training.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the fundamental pillar, the fundamental basis of strength training is that you break the muscle, the muscle tears,
yeah.
Which is, well, it's not really a failure, is it? But so no, it's a break to build.
Exactly. Spot on.
It's a metaphor.
It is a metaphor for life. But this is a thing, and this is why I think I love, you know, fell in love with weightlifting and strength training so much, is that it teaches you so much about life. That not every day you're going to be amazing. Sometimes the weight's going to feel double what it felt yesterday. But you just turn up and you give it your best anyway. And then, you know, over time, there will be a linear progression if you're on the right track. And it's, you know, I think we live in a day where everyone wants something now. And with strength training, you can't just get it now. You're not just going to be strong in an hour. You know, ladies that weightlift, you're not going to get turned into the Hulk after, you know, one session. It's just... The instant, when we talk about external validation, but there's instant validation, and weightlifting takes time to develop that strength mentally and physically.
It's interesting, isn't it? And it's like we re-met at a Soul Cycle class, which in fitness is probably one of the closest things you're going to get to like instant gratification.
100%.
That high after 45 minutes.
Yeah, I felt amazing.
I nearly cried during that climbing song. Yeah. Just shut my eyes out the seat.
It was the Miley Cyrus song.
No, it was the one that sounded a bit sort of emo.
Oh yeah, yeah, the one at the end. Yeah,
but I know what you mean about weights. And so you work with people. So you're a personal trainer.
Yeah.
And even just sitting across from you, I think, well, I would trust you implicitly.
Thank you.
To work with you, because I feel as though you would see the backstory. That Emma puts on a front, but Emma actually would like to tighten up what's going on.
Well,
physically.
I think this is the thing, is that people are afraid to be a beginner, and people are afraid to show their vulnerability. And I think people look at me sometimes and think, well, she's got her shit together. I've got slightly more shit together. There's still a lot of shit not together, but it's taken me my whole life to get to this point.
Mm.
And this is the thing.
And how old are you now?
I'm 34 now, and I'm probably only in the last couple of years. I describe it as a relief in terms of I've spent so many years worrying about what I look like. And I don't think about it now. Like, I just don't, like, for me, body confidence is not worrying about my body. I just don't.
Mm.
And there's things like obviously, I've just written a book and about this journey and into weightlifting, and I'm doing a lot of interviews and press and photo shoots. And Laura back a few years ago would have absolutely died doing this. Yeah, I probably would have starved myself for 2 weeks before. And, you know, I'm absolutely cool with it.
So what is it? Talk to me about that connection. So is it because the fact that you don't think about it?
No. Well, sometimes I do. Sometimes I do. Right? I'm very aware of my body, but I'm accepting that I'll feel sometimes better one day, not so good the other day. And overall, I'm just cool. There's other things to worry about.
But is it a disconnection that quiets that negative voice, or is it actually a deeper connection that means that the negative voice has no place in your head?
I describe it as I'm very proud of my body now. I wasn't
Ooh,
before.
Yeah.
Because of what it can do, what it represents, the people.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But I've been able to inspire, and I'm just here going, hey guys, to be fit and to be healthy, you don't actually have to look like whatever stereotype it is. You can look like me, and I'm really cool, and I'm really happy. And yes, I look a bit athletic. Yes, I've got big arms, I've got big traps. Yes, jeans are just an absolute nightmare for me. I call them leg prisons. Sometimes I have to wear, I always worry if I get invited to an event and it says no fitness clothes, I'm like, oh God, I'm gonna have to put the leg prisons on. Cause just, I'm a very different shape now, but I just own it and I love it. And I'm proud of being slightly unique.
You train a lot of people.
Yeah.
So you see a lot of different body shapes.
I do.
And I think as a 41 and a half year old woman, I don't know why I keep saying 41 and a half.
It's very important, that half.
It just makes me chuckle.
I'm 34 and a half then.
You see lots of different body shapes. And the thing I think I'm coming round to finally is trying to appreciate my body shape more than my weight or more than my clothes size.
And I
have a bit of a disconnect with it because I have an hourglass, so it's boobs and ass, and I don't particularly like walking around with a body that is sort of quintessentially sexual.
Why?
Because I don't want people to see sex when they look at me.
I just see a gorgeous woman.
But do you know what I mean? I don't want people to see tits and ass first.
Yeah, I actually don't like low cuts. I wear very high sports bras.
Yeah.
Just because I'd rather it just was away.
Mine are tit prisons.
you can't hide my ass or my legs. I think I was the Kardashian trend before it was a trend. It's always been the. But I see a lot of different shapes. And for me, when I was back in the day, when I was in like projects, like sort my body out and I'll be really happy, where I've actually found contentment and being proud of my body is, oh my God, it's so different to what I thought.
Mm.
I thought being as small as possible and really thin was really important to me. Actually, what's really important to me is enjoying my bloody life, you know, looking after myself. Yes, I'm quite athletic. No, I'm not very thin, but I'm so happy with it because I know I work hard for it. Whereas before I didn't look after my body. I put all sorts in and around it, and I shouldn't have.
Do you think it's that thing of, and maybe I can relate to it too, in my 20s and 30s, you'd always be like, it would be about losing weight or about, you know, a certain thing.
Yeah.
And when I look back, now that you say it, I think actually, like, God, the trends that we used to follow to get a perfect body, using air quotes, complete nonsense. Do you feel actually more now it's about being physically capable?
Yes. But in a... like, I don't want to sit here and think I don't care about what I look like. Like, I do. Aesthetics is really important. It's what other people see of me and make judgment. But I just feel like I've almost blocked it out. What other, like, if anyone looks at me a little bit funny, or, you know, if I notice someone, like, I walked into a gym the other day and I walked into the weight zone. It was full of men, and I picked up this massive barbell because I was doing some filming. Anyway, obviously they looked at me. And that was fine. And probably previously I would have thought, oh my God, just get out as fast as possible. But I just was fine. I was just like, really, I was just like, cool. Mm. I looked at some of the weights the guys were lifting. Half of them were doing it wrong, really bad form. And I just thought, yeah, you have no idea, guys. I just feel in such a more educated and experienced position where I know what works for me now.
Yeah.
And what that looks like is very different from what I hoped it to look like. And I like to celebrate, you know, what I look like now.
If somebody is listening to this and they are in a job that is quite corporate, that maybe they enjoy, or it doesn't actually have to be a corporate job, they're in a job that maybe they enjoy, but they've put something that they feel is a passion on the back burner, because you said at the top of the show that you were always very sporty and active when you were a kid, and then got sort of pulled into the obvious, you know, traditional sort of work life. What are your tips for somebody if someone's thinking, I'm listening to this, I'm listening to Laura, and actually maybe I should give this a go?
I guess for me, like, I do not regret one second of my corporate life. Like, I loved it, and I genuinely think it's put me in such a solid foundation to be able to, you know, for me to pursue this entrepreneurial career that I have done, because I understand how things work. So I've kind of seen the other side of it, so I think it's great. But I genuinely believe that if there is something you feel so strongly about, there is absolutely no reason why you shouldn't pursue it. And it doesn't mean you have to put yourself in a you know, really unsafe position. Make a plan that's set. Financially, I mean, because I really, from my perspective, I really understand what it feels like to go from 10 years of having a salary, you know, exactly what's coming in pretty much, and suddenly you have no idea. And honestly, I was terrified. And I still find it challenging at times because of, you know, various cash flow circumstances and being a freelancer. Just, it's not as obvious. But I feel like... Make a list, write it down. What is your purpose? What is your passion? And then start to write yourself a plan of how would I go about it? And I just feel like there's so many people in life that go, oh, I've always wanted to do blah, 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 but they've never done it. Mm. You and I are out here, we're the people that have done it. And I don't mean that in an arrogant way. I just mean it's possible.
Mm.
And I honestly am sat here today, like, I'm, you know, very, very happy in what I do. I have a book, I have a podcast, all these opportunities. I could never have guessed that I had done. And I genuinely believe because I had this passion, I stuck to my vibe, my authenticity, and my tribe have found me, as your tribe have found you. And you will never know if you don't try. The fear of failure stops us from doing so much in life. If we believe we have one life, why not give it a go? And if it doesn't work out, hey, do you know what? That's cool. The fear of failure is, be more fearful of not trying, I would say, because you'll live the rest of your life wondering what if. And there'll be people out there that could be inspired what you do. And you're perhaps, you know, stopping that from happening.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, that the impact of the work that you do, it could have an impact, a big, big impact on one person that could change their life.
Well, that's the point, is I think sometimes we can get really, you and I are both on social media and numbers are important. We're both close enough to the media to know how important numbers are. But I definitely try to put that to the back of my mind, because it's, I would rather yeah, I would rather be authentic than chase numbers, and you're definitely the same.
Yeah. I appreciate how the industry operates.
Yeah.
But I would hope that I would never do anything that I didn't truly believe in. Mm. I wouldn't promote, represent anything that I didn't use, like, love, whatever. It's just not worth it for me. I left a fantastic job with a great salary to the complete unknown. And for me, I've come too far to go back to working for the man again.
Yeah, to compromise.
Yeah, I feel like this is it now. And people will come to me, you know, whenever the time's right, because they realise that whatever it is I am saying, I truly mean.
Yeah, you live by it.
100%.
So, yeah, you've got, as you say, you've got a podcast, you've got a book.
Yeah.
People must come to you. And it's very dazzling when people start going, hey, how would you like to talk about this? Insert random product here.
Correct.
I just always say, no, thank you. But it's difficult when... you see other people taking those opportunities,
yeah,
and knowing that they're probably paying their rent or their mortgage.
Yeah.
Do you ever fall into the comparison trap on social?
I think you wouldn't be human if you didn't. I think, you know, in any sort of job, you are aware of your surroundings. In order to understand, you know, sometimes the direction that you could go in, it's important to know what does the marketplace look like at the moment? Where do I fit in? And sometimes I don't fit in. And perhaps at the start, I really thought, you know, can I adapt how I am to better please an audience? I did think I'd have to do that. I remember at the start, I was slightly advised, you know, perhaps maybe you shouldn't post as much of you lifting really heavy on your Instagram. And I was like, really? Wow. I'm not sure. Mm. Like, well, you don't want to scare people off, because, you know, my purpose, I believe, is to try and, as I said, to fly a flag to say, you know, when I did this, I felt amazing. And I have so many people around me that can relate and share that story. And I thought, I could do what everyone else is doing. Yeah, I could just fall into the crowd, or I could just continue doing this weird thing. And actually, it turns out it's not so weird. Mm. And sort of my area is full of some absolutely incredible people. Mm. It's full of a lot of bullshit as well, a hell of a lot. And I could sit here and moan about it. Mm. God, I can't believe what so and so posted. God, that workout's wrong. Mm. Why are you claiming those results? Or I could just focus on my own audience, make sure that my message is complete, correct, and you know, as I would keep it in line with my values, and just let them crack on.
Oprah said that it's always important to quote Oprah, that when
obviously
she was doing her talk show originally,
yeah,
the show, that all the other networks started to produce shows in the same slot, similar kind of content, and her producers are saying to Oprah, you've got to go and watch, you've got to see what they're doing. She said, if I spent an hour watching that show, that's an hour I could have spent on my content.
Exactly.
I will slow down. It's like, imagine running a race. You're running a race and you're in front, which Oprah was, and you want to see where everyone else is. What happens if you look to the side? You're going to slow down.
Yeah.
You're not going to run straight towards your goal.
Totally. And, you know, that sometimes you look around and you might go, that looks quite similar to what I had done. But you have no idea where that idea came from.
Mm.
And quite frankly, I didn't invent fitness. So who am I to say that person, you know, shouldn't do... Like, if it's supporting my message, fantastic.
Yeah.
The wider, the better the message. We should all be trying to make our best contribution. And, you know, like, not everyone will like my message, and that's really cool. Not everyone has to do what I do.
You didn't invent fitness, but you did invent lifted.
Well, I did, but, you know, there's millions of people and, you know, others that have their version before me. It's just something that they have their thing, but no one can deliver it like I can.
Mm.
And for me, I'm very confident in my coaching, that if you come to a session with me or I train you, you'll realise what that unique delivery is that you won't get anywhere else because it's me.
What is it?
For me, it's I've been through it. I understand. And like you were saying earlier, you must get so many different shapes and sizes. And I do, as a female in fitness and with my journey, I do have this strong affinity to women. And I can look at someone and I can see how they're standing, how they're holding themselves, their behaviour, that perhaps they don't feel so confident in a gym environment. And that was me. And I just want to be that person that goes, this is going to be fine. You know, you're here. This is going to be a great experience. You're very capable. Do not compare yourself to anyone else because this is your journey and we're going to start this together. And I want to try and educate and give people the tools to go off and smash their day. Like, they're with me for an hour. And in the grand scheme of someone's day, an hour is a hell of a lot of time. So I need to make sure I'm setting them up for success and it should be the best hour of their day. And that's so important to me because I didn't have that. And now I want to give it to other people. And it's not in a, I'm not here to deliver torture. I'm here to support you. I'm going to give you a bit of what you need, a bit of what you want. I'm going to make you, you know, you leave the room that little bit stronger because life's really stressful. So I'm not here to beat you up.
And that's, yeah, and that's speaking to your character. We were talking before, listeners, about the fact that we've both fallen into the trap previously of making sure other people are okay before we make sure we're okay.
Yeah.
So I wonder when you're, that definitely happened to me, to my detriment. It happened to you. You were the sort of person who was a real giver and perhaps wasn't getting back from the people you were giving to what
Absolutely,
you wanted.
Yeah.
And I can totally relate to that. And I wonder how you are able to give to your clients and be there with them, like really champion them, but be boundaried so that you don't stop giving to yourself. Like, is that, now that you do it professionally, that must be a skill that's really important for you to be able to articulate and master.
Absolutely. And I think I've had to learn it over a long period of time, if I'm very honest. And there are times where I think, oh, do you know what? I've not left anything for myself. And I think when you first go freelance, you go on your own, there is this ability to just go yes to everything. Because I wanted to, you know, everything was an opportunity to me and I was willing to put the work in. But what I didn't realise was there was only so long I could have done that for. And that level of sustainability of just purely giving gets you to quite a dead end. And I'm now, I'd like to say, I could probably be better, I'm very good at prioritising my own time and my own training. Because it's really important. I have to have, to be the best coach I can be and to be able to give well to other people, I need to have given a little bit to myself. And I'm quite regimented with my training. Like, I'm sure social media makes it look like I train all hours of the day because I'm always in the gym. But, you know, I'll probably do something for an hour a day, which is purely for me, at all sorts of different intensities. And that's so important because I'll spend the rest of the time, you know, doing work. Or it's also, since my mum was unwell, I made this promise to myself that every time I'd look at my phone, as you can imagine, you look at your phone, 500 million things going on in there that you've not gone back to, I would first of all check the message from my mum. That's my priority. So I'd look and I'd check her message, but I'd reply to her first, then to some of my friends, and then the rest of it. So I think it's just about setting, we've talked about this previous to recording, but setting your own boundaries. And sometimes those boundaries get crossed. That's okay, I'm aware of it, and I do better next time.
And is it also a practice of almost, you've said it again nearer the top of the show, about writing down a list and sort of putting down what you want life to look like, or what you want your situation to look like. And when it comes to priorities, like I've had to write down recently, will have a minimum of 2 meetings with mates, because I've really been bad with being social and meeting my friends. So I'm like, right, every week there's got to be a minimum of 2 dates, friend dates. Where you actually have these relationships and they're not on social media and it's not because you liked their posts.
100%. No, I know. I feel it as well. Like, even when I hang out with my mates that like aren't like in the industry or gym mates, it's so refreshing and I'm so pleased that I've done it, because unless you're in the bubble, you don't see the importance of what I'm doing. Like, I've really got to film this warm-up today. And my mate's like, do you really have to? And I'm like, no, actually, you're right. It just gives you that perspective. And yeah. I do constantly say to myself, you know, my mates, if they listen to this, they'll go, yeah, she's been saying that for a while now, that I go, I need to be more social. I need to, you know, go out and, you know, meet some new people, because it's really important. And I've had sort of last year, I was like, right, I've absolutely nailed myself for 2 years. I've worked my absolute socks off, all for really positive reasons. Mm. But I was like, right, that's it. My mates are going to New York. Like, I'm going to New York. So me and three girlfriends, we went to New York and we went to Soho House on New Year's Eve, and I was absolutely chaos. I think I was on the floor. As midnight struck, I was probably horizontal somewhere, but it was brilliant. And it's so important, isn't it, to separate sometimes your work from real life and just have a release.
Are you good then at, because you have achieved a lot, you've switched careers.
Yeah.
It was a gamble.
Huge.
And it's going well.
It is.
And there have been a lot of achievements along the way.
Yeah.
Are you good at noting them, or do you go tick right next one?
Yeah, I think I'm tick next one. Mm. I would describe it as relentless.
Mm.
I know so badly what I want. And I will go, not in a bad way. It's not like I'll tread over. I'm very, very considerate, I would hope, of other people.
No, very much so, listeners.
And I would always like to. So I always say, if someone gives me a little, I'll give them double back, because I want to take people up with me, because I remember how hard it was to start, and someone gave me an opportunity. So if anyone ever, you know, I'm usually very good at responding to DMs. I get a lot of questions, how do you get into the industry and whatever, because it can seem very, very daunting. And, you know, it's important to consider others, but focus on what is your goal, because I've made this big change.
Mm.
So I'm just going to see where it takes me.
You're going to see where it takes you, but you focused on a big goal. And then you see where it takes you. But are there not like some plans? Because it's like going from a rigid goal to then going, and now I shall see where the wind blows me.
Yeah, it's like the goal's the same. The method, I'm not so sure. Because for example, soon hopefully I'll be launching some workouts on a digital platform, which will enable me to deliver my message and my experience of me to more people. I guess that's my goal, to be as available as possible. And there's only one me, so it's finding different ways in which I can share my message, which I so passionately believe has changed my life. And I can see it with other people. I'm like, that's how I felt. Please let me help. Please let me tell you. Please let me help you. And I'm not saying I can help everyone, but there are some people that, you know, if you work with me for a little bit, or, you know, even like some people say that have read my book, that I just think so differently about myself and fitness now. And everyone gets so fixated on I have to be a certain thing, or I'll be happy when. And I'll be happy when isn't a body shape. It's not a size. Mm. It's not that. I can tell you it's not. There's other things that you need to work on, and then you start to look more positively on yourself.
And the message is, just to be really clear, it's weight, it's lifting.
For me, it is. And, what I'm not saying is that everyone needs to go and lift weights. But what I will say is that once you do it, you'll love it. If you have a good experience of doing it, there's nothing that feels more empowering than to press something over your head that you didn't think you could, or getting on a barbell for the first time and lifting something. Because in that moment, all you're thinking about is lifting the weight. You work in your breath, your body feels so powerful, and you start to realize, oh, wow, I did that. Mm-hmm. I didn't see myself as physically successful, because I actually think I'm a little bit overweight and haven't been to the gym in ages. Mm-hmm. But actually now, you know, I'm doing this training, and Jesus, I'm strong.
Yeah.
And if I can lift that, well, I'm going to go to this meeting with a bit more beans now, and I'm going to stand up for myself, and I'm going to be more present in the room. And it just has this domino effect on the rest of your life, because I've invested in me, I've built strong foundations, I can stand up nice and tall and say, I have a purpose here, and I have an opinion, and I belong.
Have you read Henry Rollins' essay about weights?
No.
I'm going to find it for you. And listeners, I'll put it in the show notes. So you are sharing your message. And one of the ways in which you are doing this is the book.
Yes,
so
I know.
How did you? And you're so giddy and excited about
it. Yeah, it's so mad. It's so mad, because I never thought, honestly, I never thought I'd write a book. And it wasn't something I'm so relentless with some things, but I never considered, oh, maybe write a book. And I was very fortunate that I trained two lovely, lovely ladies at Penguin. I didn't realise they worked at Penguin because I just see everyone in first name and, you know, Julia and Emily from the gym. And I'm just focused on their training. And, you know, one day we had this conversation. It's like, oh, you know, we work for Penguin and you're quite different in your delivery of and how you work with people. It's not over, you know, you don't beast people. It's not about lifting the heaviest always. It's about effort. That's a bit different to the narrative that we've perhaps heard about gym and fitness, which is no pain, no gain, and go on this 5 million hour diet and you'll be thin. So it was like, oh, okay, well, yeah, maybe it is a bit different. So I wrote a concept and I didn't realise how much I loved writing. Because I'd kind of gone from this office job, you know, typing away. I was suddenly freed from it, and all I have was my phone. I've had years of carting around a bloody laptop and folders and all that shit. Now my life is just my phone, and I'm standing up and I'm free in a big room all the time. It feels amazing. And now I was sat down again writing, and I had everyone, without sounding big-headed, everyone always says I have a very good way with words and how I describe something.
And don't be big-headed. You have to celebrate the things that you have strengths at.
Okay. I am quite good at writing.
I'm giving her the face.
Yeah, you can't see this, but I've got big eyes at me. I'm quite good at writing, and I like describing, you know, things I'm passionate about. So I wrote this concept, and I suddenly became like my biggest advocate of like, oh my God, I really want to write this book. And I just got so excited about the opportunity of doing it. And I wrote about 40,000 words. And I wrote it over a period of, say, 3 or 4 months. And it was one of those things where you have that conversation. They go, how long do you need to write the book? And I go, well, I don't know. How long do people usually take? You know, I'm not J.K. Rowling. I've never done this before. And some days I wrote 3,000 words. Some days I wrote none. And it was really an emotional roller coaster because you're piecing together these fictional chapters of your life. And sometimes I'd be writing at 3 a.m. because that's just when I woke up and I was like, I have to write about this now.
So what's the structure of the book? Is it autobiographical with your story? And
So at the start, it's more around me and kind of setting context of why I'm about to tell you why I think this is, you should know about this, because I've been there, I've done that, I've done all the diets. I wanted to be really thin and actually didn't find happiness there. And, you know, parts of it are, well, it's all very, very, I'm very, very honest. But some of it's quite funny, you know, because we do, you know, everyone's like, oh, the kale diet. I'm like, okay, great. You know, I've done it, but and I laugh at it now. And it's mad. And why do you do these things? Because we go into these weird trends because we think it'll help. And then it kind of goes through to what I like to call, it's like my 10 commandments for life. And I talk about these in great detail, and it's things like one of the ones I feel most passionately about is thou must never compare, because that really is useless. Because you and I sat here together, I mean, Emma and I, we get on really well. I feel like we're weirdly put together by the universe. We have so much in common, but we're so different. And if I was to compare anything to you, like it just wouldn't work. If we were to train the same, we would look very different. Our careers are very different. And I just think that really limits people. And it's a waste of time, like Oprah said. And so I go through all these sort of the training fundamentals. And then it's almost a bit of an education around whatever your goal is, whether that's aesthetic, whether it's performance, whatever it is, no judgment. You know, if you want to lose weight and tone up, like, hey, I'm here for it. Like, that's cool. If it's in the pursuit of health and wellness, I just wanted to show you how to do it in a sustainable way. Because there's a lot of bullshit out there about how to achieve something in 7 days or 14 days or whatever. And I've been training my whole life, really. And it's not about getting to a certain weight or a certain size. It's about feeding yourself with the right nutrition to make you live your best life. And as soon as you start to become more active, you start bringing weight training in, I swear to you, your whole outlook on life will change, because you're giving to yourself, you're investing. And that time could be doing Zumba. You could be like, do you know what, Laura? I really like hiking or swimming. And I'd be like, that's awesome. Find something you love. Because I've spent years going, I have to go to the gym to go on the cross trainer for an hour because it'll burn 500 calories and I had a croissant this morning. Like, how relatable is that? We've all been there. Or how about you just focus on nutrition that will make you feel good and exercise that will be good for your headspace and good for your body. Not all exercise has to be absolutely killing yourself. So it's about sharing an education around what are the options? What could I do? And find what works for you. And I know that sounds really cheesy, but most of my responses to any health and fitness questions are, well, it depends. Because I need to have a full assessment of the individual and what's your lifestyle like? You know, do I believe that doing HIIT training five times a week for John, who is stressed to his eyeballs working in the city and gets 3 hours sleep a night? No. Maybe John just needs to go for a walk, a long walk for, you know, an hour. And that could make him feel better. Maybe John doesn't eat anything till 5 p.m. because work's so stressful. Well, maybe just these small things of having that awareness and introduce it into your lifestyle could make a big change.
I must admit, back in the day, I would hammer the gym. And I did do weights, but predominantly my thing that I've always been much more capable at has been endurance.
Right.
And recently, in the last few years, like when I went through depression and I literally lost all my fitness and I went from running to walking was challenging. Like I'd go for a 10-minute walk and it would completely whack me out. I'm really proud of the fact that I'm back up to running again. I love the fact that I can suit up, put my trainers on, lace up, go out the door and I can do a run.
Amazing.
But then what I do now that I never used to do, and I guess this is something that comes with age because you can only know once you've had experiences.
Yeah.
But this morning I woke up, I've had a very, very busy week and I knew that we were seeing each other. I was at something before we saw each other today. But I woke up really early and that my brain's instantly going up early, get out, get out, get out. And I thought, actually, no, what I need to do today is I need to stretch.
Yeah, perfect.
And then I need to sit in bed and watch Southern Charm. But
perfect.
But what I need to do today, and I listen far more. So even though I always think of weekends as, oh, they're your free mornings, that's when you can go for longer runs. Sometimes I'll just put a fitness DVD on or like, you know, something on YouTube and do weights.
Yeah.
Got a set of 5 kilogram weights
perfect.
In my flat and a 10K kettlebell. And I do that. And I now understand, well, because you need a bit of strength today. And actually, if you go for a run, you might wear yourself out and it might be a bit, you know what I mean?
It's 100%.
It's listening. And I think it's taken me a long time to get to that point. It sounds that that's what you do with your training and what's obviously in the book is be more intuitive.
Sometimes less is more. And it's really hard for us to accept that because we're on the go, especially us in our lifestyle. It's like, oh, I need to do this and the big endorphin high. And, you know, we talked about SoulCycle, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But it's just exercises of stress on your body. If you're already stressed, you're adding additional stress and you're not giving yourself that time to recover. You could actually be, you know, there could be negative effects of that. And if that continues over a sustained period of time, you may lead to burnout. Then you're no good to anyone. So I guess, you know, for me in my training, I have gone through periods where I have really, really trained hard because it felt good for my head at the time, but wasn't good for my body. And then I'm in the stage now where I do have, I'm not always that motivated to train, I'll be honest, because life's pretty stressful sometimes and I don't get that great sleep if I've been working late and up early the next day. I have the understanding through a lot of trial and error of when to give it a miss or when to go, come on, girl, just give it. And also, if I am in that, come on, girl, just turn up, I also say to myself, maybe we just give it 70% today. And that's really cool. So I'm having a very positive conversation with myself about what I believe is right for me. Whereas before it was a, no matter what, you just need to do it. And if I didn't do it, oh my God, I'd beat myself up for it. I wasn't setting myself up for success. I gave myself no leeway. It was like I was like my own worst project that I never wanted to do. Because it was like, oh my God, you have to go for a run. I'd come home from work. But the last thing I want to do is go for a run. And I didn't intuitively know when to just give it a bloody rest.
Yeah, because I think I used to think the opposite of going for a run, well, not the opposite, but like the non-stressful option, the alternative to not going for a run was sitting and watching TV.
Great.
And for me personally, I then become a bit sedentary. Actually, then it's like doing a 45-minute yoga thing in front of the TV,
yeah,
or just
yeah
doing something, whether yeah it's a yoga video or you just, we know what basic stretches are, hold yeah them for a few minutes each time and just yeah unwind.
Definitely.
It's really interesting. So the book is called?
It's called Lift Yourself, and it is out, well, it's available for pre-order now, but it is out on the 25th of July, and it is available on Amazon.
This will be out, this podcast will go live when it's available.
Amazing.
Which will be incredible. And the other thing about all of this is I've really noticed a change in the conversation that's very, very pleasing. So recently I had Alex Light on, who I think you might know.
Yeah.
Who talks about body positivity.
Yeah.
And then this week I've also interviewed Ian Hayes, the chef.
Yeah, yeah.
And we talked about his book, which is 7 Day Basket. Listeners will have already heard the show with him.
Got you.
And it was the first time I've picked up a cookbook in a long while where my want out of that book was weight loss. It was the first time where the way that it was... Or, you know, basically weight loss. It was the first time I was looking at a book and actually thinking about how I would enjoy a meal.
Right.
Because there was so much guilt associated with
yeah
food and enjoying certain types of food.
Yeah.
And I read it and I was reading the introduction and just how it's formulated and structured. And I thought, nothing's off limits here. Nothing's off limits. I can have all of this.
Yeah.
And that was, again, to what you were saying about nourishing yourself.
Yeah.
And listening to yourself and what you need. And that I felt really lovely.
Yeah, but
to
it's...
think I'm not being deprived, or I'm not choosing to live a life where I deprive myself. Yeah, but it's not excess.
And that's where it comes with a bit of trial and error, is that once you find, it's, again, sounds pretty cheesy, but it's a balancing act. Everything is in life that you... If the more sometimes you tell yourself you can't do it, the more perhaps you want to do it. So if you just allow yourself these things that aren't the end of the world, and you're focusing more on being good to yourself, what that looks like, that's for you to decide. For no one else. You're in control.
What a lovely message on which to end. Laura, thank you so much. Obviously, the links to you, the podcast, the book... All the other flipping things that you do.
Where you can train with me around.
Exactly. Are going to be in the show notes. Listeners, I'm going to make her take me into Ministry of Sound.
100%.
Because I never was cool enough to go back in the late 90s. And so I feel
You're cool now. She's very cool.
So I feel like I just want to go and see what it's like when it's empty, which is probably when I would enjoy it the most, because I'm not that much of a raver. Thank you so much. It really has been a pleasure to chat.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening. Before you go, I just wanted to say, if you want to get in touch with me, all you have to do is email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. It really genuinely is the best part of my day when I get emails from you, my most excellent listeners. So please, don't be shy. Also, if you just feel like sending me a DM or a GIF or a meme on social media, slide into my DMs on Twitter and Instagram. Instagram, where I'm at Emma Guns, or you can join the closed Facebook group where you can chat with not only me, but with thousands of other listeners to the podcast. And all you have to join that is click the link in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode of the podcast. Thank you so much for your time. I cannot wait to see you on the next one.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.